Gopi Chana Palaba Girvarir Hari. Gopi Chana Palaba Girvarir Hari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parvraja Gachara Satira Sita Shri Shemana's Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON Foundry Charya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Samaveda Bhaktivrinda Ki Jai Gaura Premananda All glorious to assembled devotees. All glorious to assembled devotees. All glorious to assembled devotees. All glorious to Sri Guru and Sri Guranga. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Sabhavaya Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Namaste Sanyavati Pasakitarist. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 25, Text 4. You know, when we were younger devotees, they used to make much bigger print in these books. Sutu Vacha Vipayana Sakastveham. I didn't say that last one quite right. Dvaipayana sakastvevam Maitreyo bhagavamstita Prahedam viram prita Anvikshiksham prachodita Dvaipayana sakastvevam Maitreyo bhagavamstamta Prahedam bidaram prita Anvikshiksham prachodita. Others chant. Vipayana sakasveham. Yo bhagavam stata prahedam bidaram prita anvikshiksham prachodita Okay. Sutta Vacha. Sutta Goswami said, Dvaipayana Sakha, friend of Vyasadeva, tu, then, evam, thus, Maitreya, Maitreya, Bhagavan, worshipful, tata, in that way, praha, spoke, idam, this, vidaram, to Vidura, Prita, being pleased, Anvikshiksham, about transcendental knowledge, Prachodita, being asked. Purport, a verse and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Sri Sutta Goswami said, the most powerful sage Maitreya was a friend of Vyasadeva. Being encouraged and pleased by Vidura's inquiry about transcendental knowledge, Maitreya spoke as follows. Purport, questions and answers are very satisfactorily dealt with when the inquirer is bona fide and the speaker is also authorized. Here Maitreya is considered a powerful sage, and therefore he is also described as Bhagavan. This word can be used not only for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but for anyone who is almost as powerful as the Supreme Lord. Maitreya is addressed as Bhagavan because he was spiritually far advanced. He was a personal friend of Dvaipayana Vyasadeva, a literary incarnation of the Lord. Maitreya was very pleased with the inquiries of Vidura because they were inquiries of a bona fide, advanced devotee. When there are discourses on transcendental topics between devotees of equal mentality, the questions and answers are very fruitful and encouraging. Om Gyanat Brandasya Ganajana Salakya Chaksamitame Nadasme Shri Gurave Namaha Vanchko Patrubhisha Kriba Sindhu Bebicha Patitano Pavane Bhyo Vaishvevi Namo Namaha. So now we are beginning to shift gears. We've been hearing about, of course, Kardama Muni. Now we're moving over to the discussion of Kapila Muni, and his teachings will soon begin. So the last three verses, we were back to Sutta Goswami, sort of reintroducing the topic. And now here we have, the last fourth verse of the chapter is Sutta Goswami, and then it goes back to Maitreya, I think, and Maitreya discussing. Of course, this discussion between Vidura and Maitreya about them is not a new topic here. Remember, you may remember about 20 chapters ago, Vidura first encounters Maitreya, and they have been discussing all through this third canto. And in fact, Maitreya is the main, is the speaker all the way through the fourth canto as well. So he's been around; they've been around a long time, but still. Still, it's important to mention this about the qualities of the hearer and the speaker. So Maitreya Muni and Vidura are both very worthy hearers of the Bhagavatam. Of course, back in the early, in chapter 5, Vidura first approaches Uddhava because Uddhava had heard the final instructions of Lord Krishna before he departed. And so he went to him to try to tell him more. And Uddhava was a very, very advanced devotee. He obviously had heard from Krishna at the end of his life. He was instructed to be the carrier of spiritual knowledge. He was supposed to go up to Bhadraka Ashram and speak to the sages there. The substance of Krishna's discussions with him was in the 11th canto, what's known as the Uddhava Gita, which is many, many chapters, 20 chapters or so, incredibly, wonderful and, spiritual knowledge. So, very confidential servant of Krishna and friend. It's described, Uddhava is sort of in a mix between servitor, dasya rasa and sakya friendship rasa. Because he is very confidential. In fact, he was sent to Vrindavan in chapter 47 of the 10th canto. You might remember He was the one who was sent by Krishna to speak to the gopis, and to represent Krishna, for him to represent Krishna to the gopis. And that's a very, very, when you consider, that would be a very, very special assignment. It would take someone of, you know, a tremendous trust who totally understood Krishna and Krishna's mind, which Uddhava did. So, very advanced devotee, completely, you know, capable of instructing anyone in spiritual knowledge. So why did Uddhava direct Vidura to go to Maitreya Rishi and not teach him himself? Remember that? What's that? Exactly. Because Maitreya was a generation ahead of Uddhava. Let's see, how does that work? I know you've seen, I have in my notes here, Vidura was the uncle of Krishna, but I'm trying to remember, how could that be? Okay, Vidura is brother of Dhritarashtra and Pandu. Pandu was married to Kunti, and Kunti is Krishna's aunt, because she is the sister of his father, Vasudeva, right? So she more or less, you know, in other words, more or less like an uncle. And Uddhava is a cousin to Krishna, right? I can't remember the relationship, but you know, there's a lot of different brothers and sisters of both Devaki and Vasudeva. Plus, you have the whole other side. The whole other Vrindavan side of uncles and aunts. So Krishna has a lot of relatives, but somehow or another, they're all very related. So it wouldn't really be appropriate, he thought, for him to give instruction. And why did he send him to Maitreya? Because Maitreya is a very, very advanced devotee, as we describe here. First of all, he was present. He was present during those last instructions, right? And so he also heard these final words, you know, from Krishna. Very, very advanced in that way, just to have the opportunity to hear from Krishna in such a final and intimate setting. And it's described here in this verse as Bhagavan. Now, Bhagavan, we know, literally means one who's full of all six opulences. Like with Krishna, she's considered Bhagavan, and we have the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavad Purana. So, but Prabhupada describes, and you see this often, that a very advanced, very powerful devotee can also be called Bhagavan. And you'll see that. Lord Shiva will sometimes be called Lord Bhagavan, and, you know, like that. So very powerful devotees also can be referred to as Bhagavan. So that's another reason why Maitreya was very advanced and very worthy of speaking this portion of the Bhagavatam. And one other reason is given here, as he mentioned that he's a friend of Vyasadeva. And so from the perspective of Vidura, why would that be significant? I mean, we know Vyasadeva is a great devotee, right? He compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam, but what is he to Vidura? Isn't he his uncle? He's his father, right? Right. In other words, Vidura was born of Vyasadeva and a maidservant, I think, because he was considered a Shudra. Because he was, you know, and that's a really interesting story of how that came about, but we're not going to go into that. But somehow or another, Vyasadeva is actually the father of Vidura. So that's why it's been mentioned, because you're also a friend of Vyasadeva. And of course, Vyasadeva is said here that it's a literary incarnation of Krishna. So that's a very important thing in itself. He is what's considered an Avesha avatar, or a Shaktivesha avatar. Shakti just means empowered, or, you know, power. So he's a Shaktivesha avatar, which means he is a Jiva soul who is empowered, who has a special power that's given by Krishna. And several of these are mentioned in our scriptures. Specific powers like the power of bhakti, the power of jnana, and the power of kriya or are all mentioned, as these are powers that are taken on by some of these individual jiva souls, but who have these special qualities and power given by Krishna. Narada Muni is the incarnation for bhakti. For jnana, the incarnation is who? Shaktivesha avatar. For jnana is the four kumaras. And for priya, or a ruling power, Prithu Maharaj. who was also another Shaktiva. She wasn't a direct Vishnu Tattva incarnation. Sometimes also Parasarama are mentioned for killing the rogues and demons, Shesha for personal service, and of course Vyasadeva for their incarnations. A real good source of this, two places I found this information. One is in Krishna Sandarbha, about verse 26, I think, of the first chapter, and also in Lago Bhagavatamrita, first chapter, verse 18, the next whole verses. You all know Lago Bhagavatamrita is a very overlooked scripture, I think. I never hear people, has anyone read Lago Bhagavatamrita? But it's by Rupa Goswami. You know, it's a pretty good author. Anyway, it's a wonderful book, and the first few chapters discuss incarnations. They talk about all the different classifications of incarnations, and so they also talk about the Avesha incarnations. So these are all very, very great personalities. And of course, Vidura himself is a great personality. So it's not like he's some, you know, slouch that, you know, he's just somehow, you know, by some accident has the association of these great devotees. And we know he preaches to Dhritarashtra at the end of Dhritarashtra's life, convinces him that he has to, you know, give up everything, that, you know, his life is just, you know, he has some very vivid, remember some of those vivid discussions he tells Dhritarashtra, you know, your teeth are falling out, you're deaf, you're blind, you're, you know, you're living like a dog, you know, you know, from you to steers, you know, just handing out scraps to you. What are you doing? Get out of here. Of course, Dhritarashtra had also sort of thrown out Vidura at one point too, hadn't he? So, interesting relationship here between the two half-brothers. At any rate, when Vidura finally leaves home himself, or is asked to leave, or whichever the case may be, this is later when now Vidura has now talking to Maitreya. It's really kind of at the wrap-up here after Krishna's departing and things are winding down in this yuga, and we're moving into Kali Yuga. And of course, Vidura is also the incarnation of Yamaraj. Yeah, he's the incarnation of Yamaraj. Yamaraj was cursed, you know, because he was overly harsh. A young Brahmin boy stuck a bug with a straw or something like that, was it? Remember? And he gave him a horrible punishment, and the sage said, that wasn't fair, I was just a little kid, what did I know? He says, so I'll curse you to come down and be a Shudra, you know, in the material world. But of course, you know, Yamaraj being a great devotee, in fact, one of the 12 Mahajans, Yamaraj actually mentions in the 6th canto, the 3rd chapter, I think, he lists the 12 Mahajans, who are the great authorities on spiritual life in the Bhagavatam, and that one of them includes himself. You know, Shiva, Brahma, and our good selves, you know. We are all the authorities in Srimad Bhagavatam. So here you have incredibly qualified people. We have Vidura, who is incarnation of Yamaraj. We have Maitreya. And yet, at the same time, there's this relationship. And it's two different ways of seeing the relationship. And it's a relationship based around hearing, which is what so many of these relationships between devotees are. Where am I? But even though they're both probably, you could say, almost on an equal level, I mean, who's more advanced between these kind of devotees? You know, they're all pure devotees, very, very advanced, gurus in their own rights, probably. Yet, Vidura accepts Maitreya as his guru. And this is mentioned 2 or 3 times in the course of these 2 cantos, the 3rd and 4th canto, that he sees him as his guru. Therefore, he becomes the listener, the inquirer, and Maitreya becomes the speaker, or the one who answers the questions. So they begin the process of questions and answers. And as I said, this started, you know, early in the 3rd canto, goes all the way through the 4th canto, and only practically the next to last verse in the end of the 4th canto, 4:31:31, Vidura departs, and he goes off to wherever he goes to next, and that's the end of that conversation. And then I think they start up again, probably with Sutta Goswami. No, it starts in with Shukadeva Goswami in the 5th canto in Purikkat, I believe. Anyway, there's a lot of these embedded conversations. Somebody had studied these and say there's up to 5 or 6 levels of embedding conversations within conversations. You know, like, this reminds me of a story when they met, and when they met together, the so-and-so said, oh, well, I was told by, you know, it goes like that. So sometimes you can kind of lose track of who's actually speaking, but that's what's happening here. So Bhagavatam is compiled as a series of questions and answers. Now, it's interesting for a spiritual treatise or a spiritual book or religious book, it doesn't systematically just set down, here's the philosophy. Or we don't even see so much the speaker saying, okay, I've got all of you assembled here at Naimisharanya, like Sutta Goswami, now I'm going to tell you the truth, listen up. No, it's not like that. It's a back and forth. There's reciprocation. There's relationship. In fact, these are loving relationships, inquiring, hearing from other devotees, hearing your own realizations, and hearing their realizations. These are part of the nectar of instructions, six loving exchanges between devotees. So it's all questions and answers. And Srila Prabhupada mentions this a lot. Prabhupada would talk a lot about this in his different purports and lectures and things about questions and answers and important questions and answers. Even famous 434 verse of Bhagavad Gita describing a spiritual master. What happens? How do you approach the spiritual master? Service, but also what? Inquiries? Relevant inquiries? Is that what Prabhupada is translating? Relevant inquiries. In other words, it isn't just that you sit passively when you're being instructed in spiritual life. You also inquire. You know, you... Could someone give me some water? I'm going to dry out here. So like I said, this is kind of the nature of our spiritual practice and we see in our sampradaya questions and answers. You see this in many different scriptures. They're set up this way. Brihad Bhagavatamrita starts out questions of Uttara, Parikrita's mother, to him, you know, and so on. You could look at so many different scriptures that are based on this formula, and it kind of makes it, I think it makes it more personal. Instead of just a lecture, here's the philosophy, you know, it's somebody inquiring, somebody finding out, yeah, but I don't understand. And in fact, it's very real, because like in the Uddhava Gita, in the 11th canto, Krishna describes devotional service, especially in the 14th chapter and then the later chapters. And then he goes back and starts talking about jnana again and other things. And finally, and Uddhava is frankly gets confused. He says, I don't quite follow this. You know, and Krishna says, well, I'm just telling you everything. In other words, here's all the processes, here's all the practices, learn all of these, and then he'll reiterate that all of these, of course, devotional service is really what's most important. So in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, the first five verses are spoken by, thank you very much. Who speaks the first five verses of Bhagavatam? You all know this one. Someone we were just talking about? The compiler and author, Srila Vyasadeva. He starts, yeah, because you know those beginning, you know, long verses, you know. I used to memorize those first two verses, I can't remember anymore. But they were kind of fun to memorize. We had to do that at one of the temples I was in. But then after that, the next verse begins the questions by Shanaka Rishi and the sages to Sutta Goswami. And then Sutta Goswami speaks, and finally he gets back saying, well, I heard this all from Shukadeva Goswami, who doesn't enter until the beginning of the second canto. So that's kind of the structure that's going on there. But the point is, their first questions, they started out, they actually asked six questions. I'm not going to ask everyone. I couldn't even remember these. I had to go look these up. You know, which were? They start from like 119 through 18 or something like that. They say, what is the ultimate good for all people? What is the essence of religious scriptures by which the actual self becomes satisfied? Why did the Lord take birth from Devaki? Now, it's interesting because a lot of times, if you notice this, sometimes they'll say, as the son of Devaki. Why would they say that there? Because they want it to be very specific. They want the reader, to the people, know we're talking about Krishna. Nobody else, not another incarnation, not some other, you know, we're talking about Krishna. Only, you know, the only incarnation and son of Devaki is, you know, is Krishna. So, and then they want to know, what acts does he perform? Which simply means they're waiting to get around to the 10th canto to hear his pastimes, to hear the 10th canto pastimes, you know, which are just, you know, so enlivening and so wonderful for the devotees to hear. I said, who are his avatars? We don't not want to know just about Krishna, but we want to know everything. What are his spiritual expansions? What are his material expansions? How does he act in the material world? How does he act in the spiritual world? And very specifically, number six was, where has Dharma gone now that Krishna has left the earth? In other words, what do we do now? How does spiritual life go on? How do we continue preaching? How do we continue the Dharma, you know, continues? Remember what the answer was? Where will it now be reposed? In the Bhagavatam. You get a gold star. In the Bhagavatam, exactly. And that's the point. You see, and so finally gets around, it takes several chapters, but he goes through systematically. He goes to the first one in the second chapter. He says, O sages, I've been justly questioned by you. Your questions are worthy because they relate to Lord Krishna and so are of relevance to the world's welfare. So first of all, what makes a good question? It's related to Krishna. It has to have some spiritual connection, some spiritual meaning. Otherwise, it's just another mundane question. Okay, and only questions of this sort are completely capable of satisfying the self. In other words, our spiritual being, not our spiritual being, the spiritual being, we are the spirit, will be satisfied. We will be happy. Other things won't really make us happy. They may make us materially happy for a little while, or some part of us might become happy, but we won't be deeply satisfied in the deepest spiritual way unless that is connecting us with Krishna again in our spiritual relationship with the Lord. Okay, and so in text 6, he answers the first question. He says, the supreme occupation, Dharma, for all humanity is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self. So in other words, right from the beginning, he's basically describing pure devotional service, right? Unmotivated, uninterrupted. That means pure service. No other motivation. I'm kind of tired now today, like many of us feel sometimes, it doesn't matter. It doesn't actually, you can be tired. You can be, I can't do anything. But internally, the service desire, the service mood, the mood of love and, seeing Krishna's protection, seeing Krishna's love, always feeling part of Krishna. That can be there in any circumstance we find ourselves in life. And so that's what's being told right from the beginning. And this is why Bhagavatam is, it is the spotless Purana. It is the gold standard. Jiva Goswami spends the entire Tattvasandarbha practically for one main purpose, saying everything else I'm going to talk about in the next five sandarbhas, I'm going to use Srimad Bhagavatam as the standard of proof. Tattva. Bhagavatam. And then he goes to show why that is. Now, not people who are atheists might not like all of his arguments, but if you have a little bit of piety, it's incredible. You're totally, how can you argue? It's uncontrovertible, as they say. So, once we understand Srimad Bhagavatam and we understand what it is and what its value is, how it is the literary incarnation of the Lord that gives Dharma to us in this Kali Yuga, when so many things are wrong, then we can understand why this question and answering discussion of Bhagavatam, discussion of spiritual life, talking about Krishna amongst devotees is so important. Now, it seems like there's sort of like two different ways that one can approach hearing and questions answered about Krishna. One is obviously seeking the association of pure devotees, in the mood of one's guru and listening, say if we listen to Srila Prabhupada. Certainly that's very, very important, very valuable that we do that. That's from Jiva Goswami, Bhaktisiddhanta Anucheda 11, quotes Bhagavatam verse, O twice born sages, by serving those devotees who are free of all vice, great service is done. By such service one gains affinity for hearing the message of Vasudev. Affinity. And and Jiv Goswami explains that means taste, that affinity. So generally taste develops by association with great devotees. Serving great devotees, taste for the large Lord's topics develop. Meeting those devotees, one develops faith in worshiping Lord and then the desire to hear. So from service comes more desire to hear. From hearing comes the desire to serve, and from serving comes more desire to hear. Kind of works that way. From hearing, taste develops. Hearing from great devotees has immediate effect. So these are very, there's so many important verses like that that substantiate this importance of the propensity that to try to increase our propensity to hear from the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam from realized souls. But the same process can also be very relishable by devotees who are more equal. In the purport, the last line, I think it is, Srila Prabhupada says, when there are discourses on transcendental topics between devotees of equal mentality, the questions and answers are very fruitful and encouraging. So this is talking about Vaidura and Maitreya, because they're both very advanced devotees. So their relationship and speaking with another, although I don't want to say superficially, because it's real, Vaidura is honoring Maitreya as his spiritual master, inquiring from him, but at the same time, it could have been the other way around, probably. You know, they're both sort of on that equal level. But they find it very relishable. You know, it's really nectar for them. So sometimes the relationship is very clear, master and disciple, like when Arjuna is asking questions of Krishna. It quickly moves away from the friendship rasa to master and disciple, you know, real quickly. But here, it's more on equals. And so that can be very relishable to us. And I think our own experience will show that we get great benefit, and we do relish hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from other devotees or friends. Many devotees read regularly, or they're reading groups, or they read with their friends, or they read with their family, whatever. And it's not like we're all pure devotees, you know, injecting spiritual knowledge in each other. But if one is a sincere devotee, it's all that matters, because the Bhagavatam itself works, the holy name works. You know, when the spiritual sound vibration has benefit, whoever. Spoken by. At one point in Bhaktisiddhanta, Jiva Goswami says, it's best to hear the holy name from a pure devotee. He says, but the holy name will work anyway. However it's chanted, it will work. We know that. Lord Chaitanya has told us that. The holy name is very, very powerful. The Bhagavatam is very powerful, as long as one is sincere. I mean, Prabhupada talks about, there's the other side of it, of course, milk touched by the lips of servants of a serpent is poisonous. In other words, if one is a Mayavadi, or one is an atheist, or one is a total sense gratifier, or one is like just some kind of charlatan. And, you know, he'd give these examples of people who are professional Bhagavatam reciters. I never knew exactly what, it's hard to imagine, in America. But in India, sometimes, I've seen them. I've seen them set up in a big field, and they'll be up there, and they're very dramatic, aren't they? Great speakers, And, but I don't know if they understand anything, And, of course, they always want, and as Prabhupada said, they always want to speak about the four chapters of the Rasa Dance, That's basically their Bhagavatam Sapta, their 7 days of Bhagavatam or whatever it is. So this isn't what we want. But anyone who is a sincere devotee in the civic succession, if a new devotee, very sincere devotee, chanting, following, comes in and sits down, and we're in like in the old days, we used to sit down for prasadam or milk at night, and someone would read Krishna book. It didn't matter if that was a brand new person. If they're sincere and reading it, we all benefited. We all gained it. We all gained something from it. And we still do, of course. I'm just thinking how it used to be more in a group or within the temples. There was much more of that. Because now everybody, it's a different culture. People have their own lives. Everyone lives different places and like that. And it's not like one's better than the other. It's just different. And, and I think sometimes you get some of these old timers like myself who start, talking about the good old days. Well, they weren't all good old days either. There was good and bad at every time. There always will be. So you take the good, you take what you can out of whatever is there around you and in front of you. But the qualification is sincerity. And also the other thing is, besides just hearing someone say reciting Bhagavatam, I think another important point is that we appreciate the realizations of one another. And this is when we get back to like Nectar of Instruction, verse 4. Prabhupada says in his purport, the life of the Krishna conscious society is nourished by these six types of loving exchanges amongst the members. Therefore, people must be given the chance to associate with devotees of ISKCON and reciprocate in these six ways mentioned so an ordinary man can fully revive his dormant Krishna consciousness. So devotees who are in equal situations, or, you know, more or less, you know, God brothers, God sisters, people who are, you know, of a similar nature, they can enjoy revealing their minds to one another, their spiritual realizations. And that's one thing I've always thought about the Bhagavatam class, is it doesn't really matter. Whoever gives the Bhagavatam class, if we listen carefully, we'll get something of that particular devotee's realizations, right? Or their understanding of Krishna consciousness usually comes through, which is nice, because it's not that we understand things differently or we interpret the scriptures differently. No, we have a common understanding of the philosophy based upon Srila Prabhupada and Srila Prabhupada's explanations of the philosophy. But let's face it, there's so much of it, right? I mean, we all get that thing that just strikes us or hits us. Or, you know, have you ever had one of those things where you think you had this fantastic realization and you think about it, you just say it out loud to somebody, and it sounds pretty like, I just realized Krishna is God. They go, yeah, right, so what? No, but to you, it was a profound experience. I'm oversimplifying. It's probably something a little more complex than that. But it can be like that. We can have very profound experiences of understanding things which even sound simple, but our philosophy is so deep, nothing's really simple. Well, Prabhupada said, simple for the simple, difficult for the crooked. In other words, if we approach things simply, which I always do, I'm kind of a, you know, not really intellectual, always about spiritual life, so I mean, I just figure, I just always sort of accept everything that I hear from Srila Prabhupada. I don't get too worried about it. If I get it, I get it. I figure if I don't get it now, I'll eventually get it when I make more advancement, you know, sometime. And in the meantime, you appreciate what you can. It's like the 10th canto. I mean, I basically read the 10th canto over and over and over again. I've been doing it for several years in different versions, you know, different commentators and, you know, different formats and all like that. And everything from Krishna book to Gopal Champu to all this. You know, and it's, of course, the thing about the Bhagavatam, especially 10th canto and Krishna's pastimes, you know, it's like, it almost sounds trite when we just sort of say, like it's the right thing to say. It never gets boring. It's always new and fresh. But it really is. It really is. When you read Krishna's pastimes, they are always new and fresh. And every time I read it, I inevitably hear something I didn't remember or didn't know before, or either didn't know it or had forgotten it or whatever. And this is what is always so new and fresh about our philosophy and our scriptures and everything. Like I mentioned before, we've just started reading Lilamrita again. It's especially coming up to, you know, Prabhupada's appearance and disappearance. I kind of, you know, sometimes you feel like you just kind of really need to connect with Srila Prabhupada closely. And Lilamrita will really do that for you, especially that first canto, because it's mostly Prabhupada struggling. And you almost feel bad. I mean, you just want to protect him or help him or do something, and you can't, you know, because it's already historically happened. But you also see his tremendous determination. You know, what happened between 1960 and 1965 in India? Struggling continually. We think about when he came to America, but before that, I mean, everything he had to struggle for. He had a struggle to get paper. He had a struggle to get someone to print his books. He had to write the books. He had to print. There was a point when I think in his second volume of the Bhagavatam, he was literally buying the paper, hauling it to the printers, after it was bound, cutting it, trimming the books like that. Then he'd have to go out and sell them, which was a real struggle. Some of you think that people would think, oh, this is wonderful. Some people did. A few people appreciated it. But, you know, and then you realize it was probably, well, I think Prabhupada would say, Krishna's arrangement, that he was not very successful in India. And it forced him, pushed him more and more to come to America. Where, of course, he struggled again for a while, and then just everything started blossoming. And it was just amazing. I mean, by the time I came around in 1972, it's like the movement was all completely established almost, you know, within a few years. It wasn't, I mean, it was a little bit rough around the edges, but you know what I'm saying. Lots of temples and like that. And, you know, and Prabhupada, through it all, always kept his faith in Krishna and the words of his spiritual master, even more important, most importantly. So, yeah, it's through the mercy of Krishna and the mercy of Guru. They say that, you know, that by the mercy of Krishna, one gets a Guru, and by the mercy of the Guru, one gets Krishna. And what happens there then is a process of hearing and exchanges. And so, you know, we have that opportunity. It's very wonderful that we have. We can not only hear from our spiritual master in his books, we can hear from one another, we can read together, so many things. It was nice to see, you know, reading Krishna book in the evenings, you know, and things like that. You know, just so many ways that we can all benefit by that mutual hearing and chanting of Krishna's pastimes in the Bhagavatam. Okay, so that's it. Thank you very much. Comments, questions?
I just want to thank you for your really nice class.
Thank you.
Encouraging and inspiring, and especially the point that you were making, the fact that how with equals we hear and how we feel inspired. And I was also appreciating how Srila Prabhupada has this program, the Bhagavatam class.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, in my own spiritual life, I've always heard the Bhagavatam class, and what I'm saying, that was the way that I learned the scriptures,
mm-hmm.
is through devotees giving Bhagavatam class, and year day after day just hearing Bhagavatam class. And because I'm not such a person, although now I do a lot of reading, but over the years I really didn't do much of reading except hearing the Bhagavatam class. And so I was just appreciating what you were saying, that we hear.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, in the beginning, I didn't do so much reading either. We were too busy distributing books to actually bother to read them. No, it wasn't quite that bad. We did read. But, I think we all learned a lot through, you know, through the classes and just, you know, pick. It's at Sambandha. It's the connection. The connection is through understanding the philosophy. And when we get that, then we take up the practice, and then eventually Krishna Prema, of course, eventually love of God develops through that. Yeah. Okay.
Did you say that when you were speaking about feeling tired, but then you said, but in your mind you can maintain the service attitude, the desire to do that service, even though you're tired.
Mm-hmm.
Did you say that?
Something like that. I was sort of just free associating there. Is that something you can relate to, or would you like to discuss?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you've had some health challenges. I've had some health challenges. Probably everybody our age in this room has had health challenges. But that's the whole thing. It doesn't need to affect your internal feelings about Krishna and Krishna consciousness and your relationship. In fact, if anything, sometimes it forces us to surrender more and more deeply, right? Yeah. Okay.
Thank you for a wonderful class.
You.
I like your forum. I just, this one story has been going in my head. When you were talking about Prabhupada, I was at the airport when the Leelamrita first came out, Volume 2 came out, and I had given it to somebody was traveling, a businessman. And so we used to go to the airport to distribute books. So, of course, my Guru Maharaj wrote the books. So every time a new one came out, I got one. And so I was at the airport. I just kept remembering this all morning. And this person said, Guru Prasad, Guru Prasad. And I thought, oh my God, we're not even supposed to be here. What do you mean calling my name like that? So I turned and there was this businessman with a suitcase. And he came up to me and I said, how do you know my name? And he said, you wrote it in the book last time I asked you for your name. And I said, oh, I did. And he said, where is volume two? Where is volume two? You gave me this book and I want to know what happened to this person. And I said, I just got a copy in the mail. I hadn't even opened it yet. And I said, well, the others are coming out. He said, I want one now. I have a long trip and I want this book now. And I thought about it, so I gave him the book. I opened the book. It was still wrapped. I hadn't even opened it yet. I think volume two came out and then volume one came out, if I remember carefully.
That's the real compassion of a devotee there, isn't it? You know, you're really looking forward to it and you give it away to help another person.
He was so eager to read the book. He kept calling my name and pronounced it properly. Guru Prasad, Guru Prasad.
Yeah.
And I looked, actually, we weren't supposed to be at the airport. You know how we are, always over the place. So I was actually hiding behind the rail. He came over to me. He saw me. Of course, that's why he was calling my name. Anyhow, I gave him the book. And I was just thinking, he said, oh, I can't wait to board the plane to read it. I just remember that story. All morning it was in my head. I just wonder what happened to that person.
Yeah.
But anyhow, my comment in class is, when Prabhupada first came here, there were hardly any books.
Mm-hmm.
So we all heard the philosophy, you know, I didn't, but from Srila Prabhupada himself. And we were so attached to Prabhupada, whatever he told us, we believed it. You know, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. We want this. Everything he told us, even when we didn't understand it, we believed it. I don't know if that's possible, but that's what happened.
It is what happened. You're right.
Yeah. And so when the books came out, then when we read it, we said, oh, you know, this is what Prabhupada has been talking about. But that's how most of us heard the philosophy from people like yourself, from other people. Uh-huh. I mean, we read it. You know, we go through the motion. We read it. And sometimes, you know, we don't get the realization. But here, in this format, you get lots of realization.
Yeah. And it's true. Sometimes when we really just heard things from Prabhupada, then when the books started coming out, like the second canto was still just coming out when I joined, you know, and they were coming these little chapters at a time, like that in the second canto. But I don't know if any of you saw those, you know, little paperback with colored. They were really. I think I have a few of them around still. They're probably collector's items now, you know. But I know it was really interesting because then you see in the Bhagavatam, they say, oh, yeah, that's what Prabhupada said. You know, like all it did was confirm, of course, everything Prabhupada said. It was right there in the Bhagavatam. I was also going to mention when you mentioned that about Lilamrita and the success you had with that person who liked so much, I think I've told the story before, but Maitreyi's mother, my mother-in-law, was quite elderly, but she's very intelligent, intellectual type, and she was a college professor, but she never would read any of our books, really. I mean, she respected what we were doing, but didn't really appeal to her that much, you know. Said, that's great for you to do it, you know. But then Maitreyi sent her first volume of Lilamrita. And she read, because people like biographies, you know. People like stories, right? You know, it's like Mahabharata. It's so popular, people. It's an exciting story, you know. So she wrote, and because she was a professor, this is strange, but she like annotated it all. She wrote like a review of it. She like broke it all down, probably did this, and this, kind of gave a whole synopsis of the book and sent that far out. So then we sent her volume two, and she kept doing this. And she basically, she really had read them carefully, and you know, and this like sort of intellectual treatise on the Lilamrita. So, I mean, she had to get some benefit. If nothing else, people appreciate Prabhupada. They appreciate a pure devotee, and they get great eternal spiritual benefit just from that, right? Just being favorable to a Prabhupada.
How can you not love him? I want one comment too. In the Bhagavatam, we have Chaitanya Charitamrita. We have different examples for that Brahmin who was reading about the Bhagavatam upside down, and Lord Chaitanya embraced him and said, you know.
Yeah,
you understand the substance of this book.
Because he was crying and was reading, right?
Right,
and Lord Chaitanya says, why are you crying? He says, because every time we just saw the picture, right, of Arjuna.
Yeah.
And he said,
he had it upside down.
But when he said, I'm just thinking about Krishna and Arjuna and how much he loved him. And, it, you know, he was crying in sort of ecstasy, really,
right,
just thinking about Krishna's relationship. So, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes you don't read the book, but you hear it. My point was, in the Bhagavatam, there are different examples, like somebody like him. He said he doesn't know how to read, but he has the essence in his heart. And then, you know, somebody else who is, you know, like Jagannath Babaji, he didn't read, and his disciple was Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. So whatever stage...
Gaurakishore.
Yeah, Gaurakishore. Yes, right. So whatever stage we are in, there's always an example we can follow in the Bhagavatam. You know, this scripture is so vast, you know, and it has so many examples. So we can only be encouraged by one example or the other.
Right, and these things are very deliberate. I'm sure it's absolutely no accident or fluke that Bhaktisiddhanta, great intellectual mathematician, astrologer, philosopher, Sanskrit scholar, takes initiation, a spiritual master. He's not illiterate, but he's not a scholar, you know. A fairly simple man, but, of course, extremely advanced pure devotee of the Lord. Right? So, it's very interesting. Okay.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji.
Oh, yeah. Amar.
Thank you for the nice class. You mentioned that you have read the 10th canto multiple times.
Yeah.
And then also you said you've read multiple commentaries from different acharyas.
Yeah.
My question is, when you read the pastimes of Krishna, most of the time you already know the plot, what Krishna is going to do next.
You know what's going to
happen. Maybe if you have read one, two times, maybe not, but if you have read so many times. So, and you mentioned that you are relishing it. You are relishing each time that you read.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So could you please share what is that makes you relish? Because I'm also trying to understand, as you mentioned, there are some people who do Bhagavat Saptaha, try to talk about Krishna's pastimes, but then they don't have any love or devotion for Krishna.
Yeah.
But even though they do it continuously, mechanically, at one point of time, they should really try to appreciate.
Just
so what is
hearing,
the difference?
Yeah.
What is the difference? Like, what? Even though you're doing multiple times, you're relishing, they do multiple times, but they don't relish. So what is that?
I guess it's motive. It's our motive, you know, it's our intent.
Intent is.
It's our intent, and Krishna sees our intent. You know, like, I don't know, you know, I'm no scholar. It's not like I deeply am studying and understanding and writing something brilliant or anything like that, but because I just want to, my intent, I guess, is I enjoy hearing about Krishna's pastimes. So, you know, even though that's a very simple intent, you know, Krishna sees that. And the thing is, It works on so many levels, because first of all, the pastimes in themselves, there's something that's like embedded within them that's relishable, that gives us pleasure, you know, because, you know, hearing about Krishna is the same as associating with Krishna, right? Chanting the holy name is the same as associating with Krishna. When you associate with Krishna, you experience great pleasure, right? I mean, have you ever read any pastime where one of his devotees sees him, has a relationship with him and says, oh, I didn't like that. No, they're in ecstasy, right? And of course, they're experiencing much more intently than we are, you know, because of their purity, and they're like, a lot of them are like eternal associates and like that. But there's embedded within these pastimes is this blissful nature of Krishna that is there that we can tap into. And also, I think Krishna reveals different things to us when we're ready for different things. So sometimes we read something and 5 years later we read it again and something new seems to be there, a new realization. You know, it's probably the same information, but some new realization is there, or some deeper way of understanding it, you know, is there. I had I used to regularly read the prayers that personified Vedas every couple of years. Just, I thought it was good for me. It's kind of a discipline, you know. You know, make myself read it. And I would say probably for many years I've understood very little of it. Now I can understand most of it. Not all of it, but, you know, I mean, you know, very deep philosophy like that. But it's like you start to get it more and more. It all becomes more and more clear, and you become, and it becomes relishable. I remember, I'll confess this. You know, sometimes when there were these long, long descriptions of Krishna or Vishnu and how he looked and all this and this feature and that feature, I wouldn't always stay so, you know, absorbed and connected as I, where now I do. And now I love to hear about these descriptions of how beautiful Krishna is in all the different ways, you know. But that takes a while, I found. It's not like we get, we're talking about this taste, but we don't always experience a huge amount of taste immediately. You know, sometimes it takes some development over years of devotional service, sadhana, purification, you know, the whole bit. Anyway, thank you so much. A great topic, great question.
Thank you, Prabhuji. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? I'm sorry? What? Yeah, we have to need a microphone here.
I find lots of prayers in the Bhagavatam are very good to understand who Krishna is. Krishna is described in so many other ways in the prayers, and I find them very, very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it's a good way if you don't know how to pray to use those prayers.
What, the prayers?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, it's 9 o'clock. Oh, one more. Maitreya? I don't mean Maitreya. I was thinking Maitreya Rishi. Do you want to speak? STTD? Okay.
Attacking Mathura because it was a big, rich trade destination?
I never heard that before.
No, Jarasandha was attacking it. Historically it was. Yeah, whoa, this is my joke.
What's your point?
So, but if Jarasandha is attacking it 18 times,
yeah.
I mean, it sounds like maybe he was a little crazy. It wasn't just the trade destination.
Well, the Bhagavatam explains why it was. Krishna let him go so he could rebuild his army again, so he could destroy all of the evil, you know, kings. And
yeah, but from his side, it sounds like obsessive compulsive.
Oh yeah, like what? Like what's your problem? Why don't you get it after 15, 16 times? But and then when Krishna tricks him, you know, when he jumps off the mountain, King Krishna Balaram, and then they go off to Dwarka, then Jarasandha just thinks he's really great. I beat him. I finally won. I did it. Yeah. Okay, all glories to Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. Mm-hmm.